quiet up and listen down. Nope, scratch that, reverse it.
Mr. Wonka, I can see you're a man of great ingenuity.
What are you doing?
I'm making chocolate, of course. How do you like it? Dark, white, nutty, absolutely insane.
Many people have come here to sell chocolate. They've all been crushed by the chocolate cartel. You can't get a shop without selling chocolate, and you can't sell chocolate without a shop.
No daydreaming.
What are we gonna do, Willy?
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
What's going on, man, fam? It is your boy Richard here. You know, if I'm hosting, the other guys have had a week because, you know, they don't let me out much. But I'm here with the whole crew. I'm here with Brian. I'm here with Kent. We're here. We're talking Wonka. But before that, how are we doing? How's the holidays going?
It's good. Ready for Christmas. Ready for what we've all been waiting for all year, guys. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
I hope there's like a couple of Christmas.
Just how are they going to handle the Amber Heard situation? That's all I want to know.
I don't even care about Christmas. My Christmas is Friday when Cooper and I go to see Aquaman, the Lost Kingdom, you know?
Honestly, here's where my brain's broken. I hope it makes $800 million. Because I want
still think
them
it's going to make, well, I think it's going to make money. I think it's going to be fine. It's just funny to look at the slate as we gear up for Christmas weekend. It's usually like, oh man, there's going to be some heaters. And that's the heat this year is Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. So have fun.
I just,
America.
I think it's great because even they are like, even like the executives and like people on the movie, like this is going to be the end of the DCEU. And, you know, even they're saying it. And it would be great if this one was like, it beat Avatar 2.
Just really confuse weekend. Everybody.
Yeah, just mess with them. Like, should we keep this going?
Is $3 billion in play here? Like, I don't.
This like, that's what I'm rooting for. I hope this is the big. I hope this makes Barbie look like, you know, Dan in real life, and we just confuse WB for another year because I'm a fan of
buy
chaos.
Up every Willem Dafoe action figure. Be like, man, he really loved this character. Like,
killed. We didn't know. It didn't even test. Like, we were planning on a $30 million opening weekend, and it did $195 million.
I almost makes me want to go like pay and see it more so that that can happen, just to confuse everyone at DC even
and
more.
Then just like work chaos. Jason Momoa into the Matt Reeves Batman. They just they don't know what else to do. It's like, this is all we have.
Well, fellas, I'm actually speaking to you outside my house right now. Can't do this the way I want to.
Yeah.
But gonna try anyway. I'm camping out for Rebel Moon Part 1.
Oh,
but I'm camping out at my house because I had to watch it. Yeah, I got to watch it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So next best thing to being in the theater with my
dude. Don't waste your time, dude. You got to see the director's cut.
Yeah, I'm not interested until I can see that director's
cut. Yeah, because he was so just cut out at the knees by the Ted Sarandos held a gun to his head and made him make a lot of bad edits. Well, that's what a lot of people aren't saying, and so. Once he has,
you're not going to understand the context of the characters.
Yeah,
you know,
it needs to be at least each part has to be at least 4.5 hours long, and that's the studio's fault for not letting that happen.
Right, and you got to let him cook. You know, that's the thing. If you're going to bring in the Snides, you got to let him cook.
And yeah, you got to at least let him buy the groceries, like Bill Parcells. You know,
that's right. Yeah,
and those groceries are creatine packets and hot cocoa. Glad everything's going well. Brian, you having a good holiday season? Or you you have a good due to your work, you ever always have a pretty good break. So are you in that yet, or are you getting close to that?
Yeah. My last day was I had my work team party on Thursday of last week. So I had to be there. I was there till after lunch and then came home and
then you go back the day after
my
Easter.
Away message up and I'm off until the third and this is one of the top three reasons of why I stay in this job because it's real nice to have a little break because January, February is the busiest time for me.
Okay.
It's really basketball is a killer and I'm super tired and stressed out. All the human interaction is pretty tough on me, you know,
because
I don't like people all that much. Anyway, so getting a little rest this time is very nice. Big time for me.
Speaking of people that don't like people very much, Hugh Grant is in Wonka. So I needed a segue there. We're here to talk some Wonka. And this is one I was excited for. I like Paul King a lot. We're part of Paddington Nation on this here pod. Mm-hmm. We ride for the P-Man. That sounded worse than I meant it. Paddington and Paddington 2. So
he has asked that we stop calling him that.
Yeah.
We won't. We're not going to.
Here's some trivia. What is the origin country of Paddington?
Isn't it South America?
The bear itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Peru,
yeah,
right?
You're right. Yeah. A lot of people think England.
Yeah.
But it's he's Peruvian. So we're fans of this. And you and I were excited, Brian, because there was at one point our boy, I'm blanking on his
name. James Franco.
No.
Kevin Spacey.
That's not even funny. The writer you and I love.
Mentioning your boys. Oh.
Simon Rich. Simon Rich had done a pass on this screenplay, and that was, we were like, I don't want to see another Wonka, but if I do, the Simon Rich version, that ended up getting passed on for this version, which was annoying until it was like, oh, it's the Paddington guy? Yeah, that's a way more marketable idea. than Simon Rich. But
there's two weirdos in North Richland Hills, Texas that are going to be upset by this, but everyone else,
Simon Rich's Wonka starring Chris Fleming, and you and I are like, I'm in. But anyway, so
one podcast really loves these guys. We are
that might pass MacGruber as my favorite movie ever. That happened. He's already got the wardrobe and everything. He's perfect. Chris Fleming should be Wonka. If we make another one, if we keep doing this like WB does, there should be a Chris Fleming version, a Wonka verse. But once I saw everything was involved with this, I was excited. I am the rarest thing. And Brian, you and I have talked about this because I think even more so than you, I always think about this when it comes to LeBron. I am the rarest LeBron person in that I don't hate nor love. I'm like authentically neutral on LeBron. There are some seasons I've rooted for him, some seasons I have not. And, you know, it pretty much balances that out. And that is exactly as I am with Chalamet, meaning he's totally fine to me. He's been good at a lot of stuff, but I feel like a lot of dudes our age really hate him because their wives are into him and that bothers them. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of people that are just like, act like he's the next Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm not either of those things. I just think he's a fine young actor and I'm fine. So I didn't really care about him being cast in either direction, but I was excited about the supporting cast and all that. Obviously my boy Hugh. So, and then the trailer came out for me and I thought, it looked really good. Like, I love the aesthetic. It's exactly what I wanted. I thought the kind of whimsy was perfect. And I thought Chalamet was really flat. And I thought, no, you got to have that seems like a character. You got to really have the charismatic lead. And so then I got nervous about it, but then the buzz started being good. I tried to avoid the buzz and everything, but it was still good. So anyway, I came into this kind of nervous about Chalamet, not as a hater again, but as a, like, this might not be the right spot for him. He was great in Dune, for example. Anyway, that was my thing. I'm going to go to Kent first. What was your anticipation for this?
Not a high level of anticipation. I think we talked about this on the trailer discussion in our Movie News Rumors Rumblings episode back in the summer, that it felt a little Oz the Great and Powerful to me with just the idea of doing a prequel movie on a character no one really asked for a prequel on. And then this big corporation getting behind it, all the marketing involved. Honestly, casting Timothy Chalamet in a Willy Wonka prequel biopic directed by the director of Paddington seems like something right out of our ChatGPT segment last week. but it's not. It's a real thing that happened. I'm completely neutral on this kind of movie. These live action family musical types of movies, it's really hard to do them, exceptionally well because you have to have incredible songwriting and the right casting and the right direction. Oh, there's so many factors that go into making one of these memorable or one that just kind of comes and goes. But I'm a big fan of Willy Wonka. Grew up on the Gene Wilder version, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Highly anticipated the Tim Burton one back in, I think, 2000 when that came out or something. And, it is what it is. I wouldn't say I had a lot of anticipation for this. even though I have great love and admiration for the original one, but it's one of those things where Hollywood's not going to let it be or leave it alone if they have intellectual property rights, especially if they think they can make some money. So no different here with Wonka. Third time's a charm. And this seems to be doing well, I think. It, I don't know about money-wise, but the critics seem to like it. So, it certainly is a shock from what the trailer was that the critics would be on board with this.
Brian, what about you?
Writing, I was kind of with you, Richard. It was, I was excited about this, and but my feeling was coming in, I think I'm higher on Chalamet than you are. I'm maybe not as high as everyone is, you know. Maybe I'm not in the top 10%, but I'm maybe a little higher than you are. I was expecting, when this whole thing is announced, I'm like, I love the Paddington movies. I assume that he will put together, you know, a fun, quality world. And I expect Chalamet will be good. And then the rest of it, I don't know. I feared that we would just kind of be like, I didn't really need this. And then that trailer came out and had the exact opposite reaction. I was like, actually, I think a lot of this is really kind of cool and could be very interesting, could be a very fun world. I'm real worried about this with Chalamet. Just bad clips used. There really are only a couple of moments in this movie where I felt like he was doing a Gene Wilder impression, and they're all in the trailer. Mm-hmm. He should sue. He should sue the marketing team from Warner Brothers because it's awful. It was awful trailers. I think even some of like the posters and the fonting and things like that is kind of bad. I don't know. It's just they clearly did not want to sell this as a musical, which is a whole other thing that I don't know if we care to get into or not, you know.
Speaking of that, Brian,
that's what we ended up with. Yeah.
I think I saw something the other day. I was reading about this, about how Hollywood, if they make a musical, it's like this secret thing in Hollywood that they can't market it as a musical. They basically have to trick people into coming there. Yeah. So it seems like this Color Purple movie, the fact that it's being marketed so heavily as a musical, it's probably going to work against it at the end of the day.
Yeah, and
West Side Story was kind of the nail in that coffin a bit.
Right.
Cats is the cause of all this.
And this didn't have much musical in the trailer at all, much singing.
At all.
You expect singing with this type of thing, but it wasn't like, come see the musical event of the year. None of that in the marketing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I would say I was more excited before the trailer than I was after the trailer, for sure. And then the buzz started growing on this. I'm with you, Rich. It's like, I try to have like one eye kind of like gaze over at the Rotten Tomatoes score, or like see what, and it's mostly like just scanning the Discord, you know, whenever something comes out, I'll check our VIP Discord, and usually someone will post like first reactions, and that's kind of all I want. I definitely don't ever want a review or a podcast episode or anything like that on a movie before I see it. But the buzz on this was so good that it kind of was like, okay, well, maybe this is one of those cases where the trailer and the marketing is terrible and the movie's actually really good. And that's, for me, that's what we got. I think this turned out very, very well.
Yeah. Same. I like this a lot, and I'm one of those people that's kind of allergic to musicals, but I found it cut really well. And it, you know, inserted in Wonka, you know, has the original Wonka has the perfect amount of songs in it, which is why I love it. I don't like musicals where it's like 29 songs. I mean, I get them on stage because that's what you're there to see. But like in a movie, you know, if there needs to be music in it, I get it. But can we get 6 songs? That's fine. 2 hours. Like, I don't need 60. It doesn't all need to be sung through. So this had a good, I mean, there's quite a few songs in this, but I don't know. They were spaced out well, and the humor was great and all of that. And Chalamet, he did a great job in this. And you're right. There are those kind of Gene Wilder impression moments. They're all bad, and they're all in the trailer. And that's weird. Mm-hmm. Maybe the trailer editor's wife or girlfriend is a big Chalamet fan. You know, he's like, oh.
Well, I'll show them.
Yeah. Like this. Fool. There's that. Remember that John Mulaney thing at the, when he did the Independent Spirit Awards, he's talking about Timothy Chalamet. He goes, you know who else is a big Timothy Chalamet fan? My wife. And it hurts my feelings. but yeah, it did really work for me. And the world is fun. It has the kind of, and that's the same for the original, and we'll talk about the Depp one a bit, but the original has that, it's kind of, you know, the Roald Dahl thing is quasi Dickensian mixed with this like American chocolatier and a very English sensibility and aesthetic. And this did that too, you know. I think it's purposeful that they would cast an American actor in this, in an otherwise quite English, English feeling and look in casted film. So anyway, it all worked really well for me. And, you know, we all are, it's Hugh Grant's world. We're all just living in it, man. I mean, this is our king, the greatest movie star of my lifetime. And so anytime he's on stage in any kind of comedic or on screen, any kind of comedic role, I'm going to like it because I am predisposed to ride for my boy. So Kent, what did you think? You were not anticipating it, but what did you think coming out?
Yeah, I think it's an objectively well-made movie.
Yeah. Well, the details shot. Are great. King's great at that.
Great production design, you know, good choreography. I think all of that was great. I think this movie for me hinges completely on Chalamet, and I'm a Chalamet fan. I've really enjoyed him in almost everything, but I think he needs to stick to drama. I think that's what it is. I think he needs to do something with some grit, with a little bit of edge. I root for him. I'm still a fan of his, but I don't know if whimsical musical is what he's made for, to be quite honest with you. Not to say it's a bad performance, but you know, I can't ignore the original Willy Wonka. I suppose you could bring your kid that's maybe never seen that, and this could be their only exposure to Willy Wonka, the character. But there's such a disconnect between, and I think this goes for Hollywood in general. We saw it the last time around. They don't know what to do with Willy Wonka. They don't know the character. They don't understand what made Gene Wilder's performance great, what made that character mysterious, all of that kind of stuff. And so it was just a hard sell for me to see the connection between this character of Wonka and the character that we get. Yeah. Like, to me, this isn't the same. I could not picture this person putting people on a dark ride and showing them disturbing images. Like, that never, you know, that just, it seems like two completely different people. Now, and I'm not saying like this could have been part of his life at some point, but to me, there's like still a bridge to be built between Chalamet and Gene Wilder's Wonka. Like, how did he go from the kid Wonka to the kind of oddly disturbing, weird, we don't know who this guy is. He's tricking people with fine print. He, you know, he's kind
of. But he's not, is the thing, too, right? That's revealed at the end of the movie that he's this sweetheart all along. And that's all. He's like play acting, kind of this villainous thing. So that's like spoiled by that movie.
Oh,
is what's hard about it, right? But the reveal of the original ruins the. You can't really do brooding Wonka again because you know that it was he's so excited for Charlie and picks the right kid and he's this great morality tester and he murders a few kids, but you know who hasn't?
Yeah.
And you know, you move on. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like the great thing about the original Wonka, which is why they probably shouldn't mess with it if we're all being, you know, I understand there's commerce involved, is that, you know, it is this great mystery. He's kind of a villain for a lot of it. It's this evil guy, and he's hoarding these recipes, and he has these slaves, and
right.
He's a couple
kids
die.
What makes him go into his house for 40 years and not come out? You know, all of that kind of stuff. Like, they're still, I don't know if their plan was to do a sequel to this, and we show the evolution of the character. Maybe that's it. But to me, this feels like this is how he was as a kid, and we still don't quite know how he got to where he was when he was an adult. And not to say it's a bad thing, because this is Timothy Chalamet's interpretation of Wonka. Perhaps, even I probably should have done research on this, but perhaps Paul King said, we're throwing out anything that's ever been done on this, aside from a few nods to the original via song and costume design, etc. But from a story standpoint, we're treating this as, you know, we have the Roald Dahl book only, and that's all we're going off of. And then maybe this makes a bit more sense. But yeah, just, I don't know if it's Chalamet. I don't know if it's Hollywood at large that's trying to market. But I don't know. It just still felt a little bit odd to me. And maybe, again, that's just a casting thing. Maybe
it's a hard adaptation, too, because you have the simultaneous legacy of the original Gene Wilder film.
Yeah.
Who the author, Roald Dahl, that he hated that movie. Like, yeah, he thought it was such a betrayal of what he did. And it's funny, you know? So how do you honor both of those legacies? Someone made something that was, like, to the author, very a terrible adaptation. And then that movie's a classic that pretty much everyone likes across all generations. Right. And so who do you try to please there? I don't know. I mean, I think you try to please the Wilder film because, like, I think its legacy is going to be longer than that book. And the original, it's tough because the original idea is the book or the story, but I don't know. I think that movie weirdly, like, lives on forever. Kind of has the Mad Men thing where it kind of takes place out of time. It's like the one old movie that current kids don't mind watching, right, Brian? Like, Cooper probably liked this movie.
He did, yeah. Right? We watched earlier this year, one of my kids was in, like, a school production of Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
And one of Cooper's buddies. And so we watched the movie, and he really dug it. He was very high on it and had a good time with it, and was really pumped for this thing too. So
they like this one.
He did. Right when it ended, he was like, "That's the best movie of the year for him."
And that's awesome.
So we talked it out a little bit. I think he's probably gonna come down on it just a little bit, but yeah, he was really into it, really hyped with it. So it was a good time.
We hadn't seen Maestro yet, so
exactly, yeah, or Rebel Moon, obviously. He's a big Snide guy, as you can tell. You guys saw his arms at
yeah,
Jude's
he's
party.
Shredded.
Yeah, he could definitely beat me in an arm wrestling contest right now. This so here's the deal. That Wilder, that's one of the all time like iconic characters, and you can't. To your point, Kent, you can't, it's not even that you can top it. You can't really even begin to touch it, I think. I think it's just such a...
You can't ignore the fact that it exists in such a prominent way in Hollywood history that acting like it doesn't exist is acting like Darth Vader doesn't exist. It's like, okay, you can pretend that he's not a character, but we all still know we've seen that. We know that, you know? So we can't just erase that from our minds is kind of the thing.
Yeah. So I think the way that you do that is for me, is exactly what they did here. They leaned, partly it's the thing of doing a prequel. You get to reset, like, who this person is or who he was, because you're doing, you know, whatever, 40 or 50 years, whatever it might be, 30, 40, 50 years ahead of this beloved movie. But the thing that you've got to do in that time and on that screen is, I think at least, you got to just let that character be its own character. And you're right, Kent, like, you can't ignore that we have this beloved character that everybody for multiple generations now knows and loves and is maybe a little creeped out by. You got to kind of make this, though, it's its own thing instead of having Chalamet do like an impression of that character. That's what I was worried about, is that we're going to end up doing that. Like there was a bit of talk that they should have cast the bear. What's that guy? Jeremy Allen White should have cast him because he looks a little bit like Gene Wilder. He has this. Mm-hmm. Timothy Chalamet is a beautiful person. Gene Wilder. And I think Jeremy Allen White, like, they have sort of an off-kilter.
It's like mysterious vibe.
Yeah, there's a charisma. Gene Wilder's charisma is more the selling point than his actual attractiveness, I think. And I think the same can be said for this guy. So that's the whole point of the complaint or the meme or whatever. Like, I should have cast this guy. I think that would have been a terrible idea, because I think the entire movie, you would have spent your time thinking about Gene Wilder instead of what's actually happening on the screen. And so for me, I think that it's a fair point to say that maybe I like Chalamet quite a bit in this. I'm more than fine with it. It's a B plus to A minus performance in this role, I think, for me. The key to that, though, is that within it's like 10 minutes in, I spent 10 minutes with my brain doing this jump, this back and forth thing of like thinking about Gene Wilder and this movie that we all love and every single person has seen, and then here's a different interpretation of this character. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes, my brain stopped doing that for the most part. And that is a credit, I think, both to Chalamet and to Paul King for creating a new vision for this character that doesn't like fly in the face of what the original character was, but is, again, especially helps with you're doing a prequel kind of thing. You can extrapolate this out to, all right, I don't know how he turns into the person that he is, who's been locked away in his factory for years and years and years before they open the doors there and do the golden ticket and all that kind of stuff. And you can, whatever part of that character in the original is like an act that he's putting on for the kids versus what part is he is sort of a recluse and sad and angry or whatever else, that hasn't come yet. And so you get to recast that character in a different light, in a positive light, to make him hopeful and inquisitive and all this other stuff that goes along with the weirdness and the eccentricity and the whimsy, if you want to go that route, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a brilliant choice to make the character so much different than what you see for the majority of that movie, and to just allow Chalamet to do his own thing. Other than, again, there's like two or three moments, and I have no idea why in the world we went with all those in the trailer. Credit to him for figuring out how to do this role in a way that is not only, like, I don't even know if homage is the right word, but like it doesn't do anything to go against that character, really, in my opinion. But it also he gets a chance to like kind of make it his own, and I love that. I think it worked out really well.
I wish he had gone a little more Michael Jackson to honor my walk.
right, yeah. Just be a little bit creepier, yeah. Dude.
That seemed really like creepy. Such a good idea at the time too. I was so high on Depp off. That's fresh off Pirates, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
It's just like, oh, like such a minute into that movie, yeah. I was like, oh no. So let's talk a little bit about this great supporting cast. We have Sally Hawkins, who's awesome in this. And she manages to not have sex with a fish, which I appreciated in this film. And then we have Keegan Michael Key. We have just kind of a murderer's row of comedic, you know, supporting actors and actresses. So how did the overall casting work for you? Hugh Grant as well, obviously, we talked about that.
I really liked Keegan Michael Key's bit. Same. I thought that was a funny thing to keep coming back to, how they're bribing him with chocolate and he keeps gaining weight. And by the end of the thing, he can't even get out of the police car. I liked that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makeup was great on
simple
that.
Simple gag. You know, Olivia Colman.
Yes.
The goat.
Man, she's so freaking good.
Yeah. And Sally Hawkins just makes me, in a good way, just weep with sympathy. All the characters she plays, you just feel for her. So it's a natural casting there to be Willie's mother and to have that sympathetic thing. And then we did Love Actually. We're doing Love Actually, I should say, on the VIP episode this week. So big week of Rowan Atkinson and Hugh Grant for us.
Yeah,
just full, full on, get a full taste of what those guys bring to the table. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you my Rowan Atkinson when I was in Europe story? The most genius multicultural idea ever. My wife and I went on our honeymoon to Valencia, Spain, and Barcelona, Spain. We flew to Valencia because it was a lot cheaper and trained up to Barcelona. We did like 5 days in each city. So, but we had to connect in Paris. So we get, you know, basically the equivalent of a Southwest flight or a Ryanair flight or whatever from De Gaulle in Paris to Valencia. And it's like the most multicultural plane ever. You know, it's like 20% American, 20% English, 20% French, 30% Italian or Spanish. You know, it's like a bunch of different languages. It's like a 2.5 hour flight. Get up in the air, the monitors pop down, and it's just 2 hours of Mr. Bean. And I was like, how smart is this? Don't need any language. Like, we just,
the most international,
everyone laughed
comedy
on the plane. Everyone had a great time. It was like every like kind of multicultural international flight, this should just be the go-to, because it's just like, it's just 2 hours of being. People were just dying laughing. No one was looking at their phones. No one needed. The guy next to me did not speak the same language. We had a great time together. It was a great, great moment in my life. I always think fondly of Rowan Atkinson for that.
It's great. Big fan of Bean. So it's always weird to see him talking in movies.
Yeah.
But
yeah, definitely.
He's the priest character is really funny in this. He's good.
Great bit. Well done on that. Yeah, supporting cast is great here. So even like the Chocolate Cartel, I don't know those three from many things. I mean, like Bridesmaids with Matt Lucas and a couple of things. Like all three of them are people that you've seen in other movies or whatever, but they were great. Their whole the collection of those three was really great. And the music, the dance, song and dances that they did were very funny. Well done. Really well done on that front. But it's freaking Olivia Colman. Like how, yeah. I mean, I love when, and Hugh Grant falls into this category too. It's just, Olivia Colman might be the best working actress right now.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Across the entire industry. And she is willing to not slum it. I mean, she's going all in on this character. It's not a cameo. It's not the Matt Damon thing. But the willingness to play a role like this when she could just continue trying to get more Oscars. And she would deserve them because she's so stinking good. But yeah, to show up in this and to be able to get an actor of her caliber for this very silly, funny role is, gosh, it's so good. I love when that happens. I love when an actor is willing to do that kind of thing. And then, of course, Hugh Grant is in Oompa Loompa costume.
And
why
it.
Couldn't they dress him like an Oompa Loompa so and shrink him down? Why did they have to do this weird face replacement thing?
I know.
It was weird.
I know.
Why is the Oompa Loompa a foot tall?
And he probably agreed to be in, would not put makeup on, probably. That was probably they probably just.
Maybe.
I liked it. I thought it worked. I thought it was a.
He's
it was the
man. His timing is
perfect awesome. Level of extra weirdness. Like, I'm glad that he wasn't in the movie the whole time, right? Just tagging along and and being in the background of some of these scenes and being sort of unnecessary to it. The way that they did it, he doesn't come in until over half of the movie, I guess. And that's it's perfect. It's really funny. It's used very well. He pops up in a few scenes. He has a couple of key moments.
I wish they hadn't marketed it as much.
I do too. I wish he hadn't been in the trailer at all. It would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
You just hear like the whistle or something instead of actually seeing and knowing who it is. Yeah. That would have been really cool.
But then you couldn't have him doing the press tour. And
that's true.
Yeah. It's true.
Fair point.
It's true.
And that's what we're all here for.
It's not worth it. If you can't have him do the press tour, why do you get Hugh Grant?
He was on the best is, he was on, I don't know if you've seen the YouTube of him on Drew Barrymore, her show, which is still on for some reason.
Yeah.
Which is great because they did that movie together and, you know, didn't get along great. But they've since made up, you know, that's kind of his move. And she asks him all these like dumb daytime talk show questions. And it's like, do you ever get hangry? And he's like, what's that? And it's like, when you get in a bad mood because you're hungry. And he goes, oh yeah, I do. I definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And then I get really angry after I've eaten as well. and then he does like 10 minutes on all the foods that make him mad after he eats them. It's just like,
here's, king, if we really wanted to go dark with, our Wonka prequel, we should have just made the Grandpa Joe prequel.
Yeah.
He's just stealing candy from kids.
Hugh Grant could have done that.
Yeah. Punching kids in the face, pretending to be disabled.
Grandpa Joe or Uncle Frank? You got to spend a week vacation with one of them. What do you? Where do you go?
Grandpa Joe.
You'd rather be with Grandpa Joe?
Oh, no. I mean, that's the one I would not want to.
Oh, you'd kill Grandpa Joe.
Yes.
All right. F, Mary, kill. Grandpa Joe, Uncle Frank, and greatness. So I want to go a little bit onto the, because it's so much of it. Did the overall, we touched on it, but we'll talk about it a little more. Did the overall aesthetic work for you? Like, did this world something, did you leave wanting to spend more time in this world? Not necessarily a sequel, but like, that's what you want.
I did.
Yeah, same.
I thought it was great world building. I thought, all this sort of, and I don't know that I've ever read this book. I read a lot of doll books growing up, but I haven't in, 30 years almost at this point, I guess. I can't remember if I ever read this one or not. I loved this setting being sort of ambiguous and having Parisian inspiration and German inspiration and then, I don't know, like sort of Pittsburgh inspiration, I thought it was cool. I thought in the
had a very Piccadilly Circus feel.
Totally. And I just thought the concept of the chocolate cartel and their silliness was very funny. That was a great bit. And so all of the world building around that, with like their headquarters being underneath the church and these chocolate obsessed priests and everything. Yeah, I think the world is really good. Like that was a. I don't know if it was a bonus, but it was definitely a strong part of this whole thing that I was really happy to see that come through. It was great world building for me.
Kent, you're the designer of the three of us. Did it work for you?
Yeah, it did. I wished it was more colorful. I wish they had gotten to Wonka opening his shop earlier in the movie, because it was an hour in before we get any real color. And that's what I do remember about the original, was even in the non-factory stuff, it still was like shot in the daytime outside. I mean, it's very, very bright, colorful experience throughout. So I did like when we eventually got there. Wish we would have spent more time in the shop itself. Felt like a very short sequence, a little song and dance, and then then we're out. But yeah, I think the production design was super unique, because you can go a lot of different directions with this. You can go the Tim Burton, just completely insane, almost surreal, or you can go the original, which is just shoot it in a real town and call it Wonka's Factory. So this seems like a good cross section between them. And I imagine this will be up for some awards at the end of the year, production design, costume design.
I hope so. It's one of the best I saw all year.
Things like that. But what did you guys think of the music?
I give it just the music, I would give like a B, B minus. But I hate music in movies. So the fact that that's probably an A for most people.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. A couple better than others, but I thought it was used. Number one, I thought the songs were pretty good. And number two, I thought they were an appropriate number of songs in the movie, if that makes sense. I've gotten to where I like a musical. I didn't years ago. Wasn't a musical guy. I think probably being married to somebody who loves musicals and is so into this kind of this world, like, probably helps a little bit.
I have the exact opposite experience. That I used to be fine with them, and now I think because Sarah hates them so much, I hate them. So funny.
Yeah. But I hate when it becomes like an opera, basically. I don't like that. That's too much singing. I thought that was really well done. The opening number, I think, is very good. Kind of sets the tone for what you're going to get here. And they are always... I was curious at what point they were going to roll out Pure Imagination, and I think they held it perfectly to the end. I would have been okay if they'd found a spot somewhere in the, you know, the bridge between the second and third act, if that was the way they wanted to go. But I like that it held to the end. I love that song. I think it has so much like emotional pull, I think, for anybody who really likes that original movie. And so it was a great way to bust that out at the end. So I dug it. Good music. What about you though, Kent? You're the musician. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty hit and miss throughout. The best moments were the homages to the original. The Oompa Loompa song was great. That it wasn't this weird Willy Wonka, which is what Burton did. They actually just redid the Oompa Loompa song. I wish they would have used more.
Danny Elfman, though, it stinks.
Oh,
he wasn't around for this one.
He's a great person.
Great dude. Said. He's got a great look going right now.
I wish they would have used some of the originals more. Like, my favorite one from the original is the Candyman song.
Yeah.
From the candy shop in the original. So
the music in the original is so good.
Dude, every song. I mean,
again, I'm grandfathered in on that one, but I love
the Golden Goose song. I mean, there's so many classics in that. I did like the homages to the original. Didn't think there was too many.
I'm excited to see them again. The most, see if there's more.
Yeah.
The one that I liked the most was the Violet Beauregard scene in the original where she has the 5-course meal in the gum, doing that with the security guard, but it's all alcohol. I thought was pretty pretty good.
That was a great bit. Really funny. Yeah. And to have it pay off at the end too was funny as well. Good bit.
Is he a magician? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think so. I think he says that he wanted to be a magician when he was a kid, and that this was sort of the end result of that, the chocolate making.
Yeah.
Combine his passion with his
mom's.
Because
I think before you never knew what was going on behind the scenes at the chocolate factory. Like, is this something secret with the Oompa Loompas that they're bringing to the table that makes this magic? Is this all smoke and mirrors? I think there's enough evidence in this movie to say, no, this guy's just straight up, like, he makes things appear as if from nowhere. He's pulling things out of his hat constantly. He's got these flying chocolates. I mean, it's not the factory, it's Willy.
Yes, I think the original leaves it sort of purposefully I don't know if ambiguous even is the right word, but just like it could be science. It could be the factory kind of thing. These weird things that can happen with this candy. This takes that away.
Where do you fall on the end? What's one of my favorite scenes in the original is when they go to his office and he's just sitting in there and it's the you lose, you get nothing sequence where you kind of realize that he's not this whimsical genius, that he's just this broken human being. There is a little bit, I think, from the original, the way Wilder played that, like, I might not be magic. I might just be a normal guy who's tricked everybody into believing that I'm this chocolate god, when in actuality, I'm this miserable, miserable person. And I think with the home life stuff in here, they surely hint at that. But I still, like I said, still think there's a bridge between this and what he becomes. I think there's more to tell of the story. Like, to me, this is how Willy opened up his chocolate factory, not how Willy became Willy Wonka. Does that make sense?
Yeah, agree. I would agree. Yeah.
Maybe he's got a hot Oompa lady, number two. You know?
If you've never read the book, though, it is crazy. I do remember reading it, and the stuff, the Oompa Loompa Land stuff in the book is wild.
Yeah.
So maybe we get, I was hoping we would get more of that. There is some of that in this movie where they actually show him at Loompa Land stealing the chocolate and all of that. So it was cool to see that kind of come to the screen from the book. What, because there's so much background on that situation in the book. I did like the background on Slugworth though, and his kind of stranglehold on in chocolate, and why it makes, you know, makes more sense now why he wanted Willy's recipes and all that kind of stuff. And he's Willy's ultimate villain. So I guess it's good to get some context for that side of the story.
The chocolate cartel thing was one of my favorite parts of the movie. I thought it was very well done. Really funny.
I'm surprised there's not one piece of candy in this movie that they just marketed for real and sold. Doesn't that seem like the easiest sell if you're making this movie is... if it's the Everlasting Gobstopper, oh, we're going to sell Everlasting Gobstoppers for people to eat, or Wonka bars or whatever. There was no like item in this movie that I felt like they could just package and sell to people. Like I wasn't craving, like I usually am just craving chocolate when I watch Willy Wonka and I'm like, I need a chocolate bar right now. There wasn't like that thirst, well, I guess. Like it's really just food porn in the original where they're showing this chocolate factory, you know, so...
I guess if anything, I'm surprised, and maybe it's out there and I just haven't seen it, but I'm surprised that the Target hasn't been flooded with repackaged candy, you know, that has the new logo.
Especially this time of year, like why else put it at Christmas?
Yeah. I'm a little, there's been a little bit. I was doing like stocking stuffer shopping on Friday and there was a couple things, but they were like the normal Wonka branded candies.
I saw. I think it's because the Wonka is an actual candy company, probably.
Yeah, totally. But that's what I mean. They're like, why not roll in with
new? Why not have this? Yeah, why have this peak at the end with him creating this?
They have done it in
signature Wonka bar, and then you can buy the exact packaging version.
The IHOP stuff is awful. Like, I'm not an IHOP guy, but that is aggressively idiocracy. The IHOP.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And Crumble had a Wonka cookie.
That's fine. Crumble can do it.
Stuff like that. So
okay, that's fine. IHOP's but this is a movie about chocolate bar. Why can't I buy the chocolate bar? Doesn't seem to make seems like an oversight in the marketing department. Sure.
I know.
With the marketing on this movie, not good, as we've established.
Yeah.
So I think they missed a lot.
Maybe they didn't think this would make money. Maybe they were scared. I don't know. It's kind of an odd.
Then put it out in February.
Because there's not a lot of competition this holiday season, and this seems like a good family experience. I imagine it'll make a decent amount of money over Christmas. It just seems like they didn't know what they had, and they're scared.
I wish it didn't come out a week later. Like, I wish this was the Christmas. Like, on Christmas Day, we'll go see a movie, me and Coop and Lindsay, and sometimes Lindsay's mom will come with us. And we're going to end up seeing Migration because it's the only newer, having already seen this. And I know not everybody lives in a world where they have to see every movie on opening weekend in order to do very.
It will be interesting
podcast,
the legs on this, like if it has another big week next week. To your point, Brian.
This and Aquaman would have switched places. Well, in a perfect world, Aquaman would not exist. But
In a perfect world, Aquaman makes $750 million opening weekend.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen this on.
And Zaslav gets $700 million of that as part of his deal.
Right.
It doesn't even go to Warner Brothers. Privately goes to him as part of his deal.
Yeah. So
then he pushes for 9 more Aquaman.
Yeah. It just comes in a briefcase of cocaine. That's it. He doesn't even see the money. It just goes straight to him. Yeah.
That's the world I want to live in.
For 3 months.
He has an Aquaman bonus in his contract.
Love it.
I agree. They probably would have been good to flip them. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this one does next week and over the overall Christmas break, because kids will be going to see this, et cetera, as they're off school, in the next couple days.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, should we grade this bad boy out?
Yeah,
let's do it.
All right, Brian, I'll go to you first. What do you think of Paul King's?
Straight A for me. Really, really well done. So much better than I really expected by the time we actually got to this. I think the songs were very well timed. I thought the performance was good. Very, very heartwarming and touching. Very organically emotional without feeling like terrorism, I feel like. And
He's a good, sincere person.
He really is. Sincerity is
it's a really difficult thing to pull off,
and he does it beautifully. So I'm pumped. Not that the Paddington movies are so good. I should have already been like, but I'm at the point now. I'm like, whatever this guy does, I'm gonna be pumped to see it from here on. Which I guess the next thing is he directing the third one.
I think he's off of it, isn't he?
That's sad. Okay, I need to look.
I remember that news.
Didn't he get off it to do this? Something.
Yeah, that might be the deal. Because it's that movie. I was making our 24 schedule today. It won't be out here until beginning of January 25. So we'll see.
He wrote it though. He wrote Paddington in Peru, but he did not. He is not directing it.
Okay.
But he is part of the story, and we'll see. Dougal Wilson, who's directed some Coldplay videos, is doing this.
It's got Rachel Zegler, so that's all I care about.
Yeah, what would you like to, what other property, final question real quick, what final property would you like to see Mr. King do? I'm serious. I wouldn't mind if he did a Bond. Be so different, but I think it's attention to detail, and he's so English that I feel like his Bond could actually be kind of cool. That's mine.
Interesting. I'd have to think on that. That's...
Harry Potter would be obvious too, right? Yeah. Like, see what he could do in that
just
world.
Turn whatever you're going to do over to him on that.
Give him the Fantastic Beasts series or whatever. He could have done something.
Please
with that,
don't. Robert. We're good.
Just start over. Don't do any more.
Don't do those. No more Beasts.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Just something else. She'll tweet something and retcon something that he could make.
Yeah. Make more movies. Don't. Just stop with that one. Leave that
one. All right, I'm going to give this an A minus for me, just because. I don't love that it exists, but the fact that it doesn't is good is great. And Hugh. So A minus for me. Kent, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go straight B on it, but I'll definitely recommend this one if any family members, friends, or hit me up. What should I take my family to? This will be the one.
Absolutely.
To tell.
Well, or Godzilla. Cool. Absolutely. Or Godzilla. Godzilla.
Yeah.
Godzilla. All right. Well, this was our Wonka. And hey, boys, what do you say we hit him with one of those weekly recommends that we do?
Weekly recommends.
Okay. Brian, what you got for us?
Going to recommend a movie. I don't know if you guys have heard of these. Talkies, I have not. Maybe. Sort of a new technology. I'm doing the big catch up to try to get as many movies in before our movie year ends, which, as we said last week, is like end of January is when movies stop for us. It takes forever to catch up on the 700 to 800 movies that come out on Christmas Day specifically. But yeah, I'm running through a bunch of movies right now in the background, some in the background, some I'm like trying to make more appointment viewing. I'm going to recommend, and this is a, let me just give a little caveat. A lot of people hate this movie. It's been kind of divisive. Like I've seen some reviews that are like, this is the worst movie of the year. And then others that, it's pretty popular in our Discord, so I don't think I'm alone in this. It's got a decent score. If you guys seen the Leave the World Behind, the Sam Esmail, whatever, the Mr. Robot
I haven't
guy,
seen it yet. I will. Okay. I will before the end of the year. But okay.
I have it's not. Weird. I've seen the conspiracy theories, though.
Okay. Yeah. Look, it's weird. It's a weird movie. It's not going to be for everyone. I try not to do that too often with weekly recommends, but I really dug it. I was very high on it, and it was, for me, it was one of those that I think the last, like the literal last scene is either going, for me, it went from a 3-star to a 4-star movie, and I think for some people it's going to be the opposite of that. So it's kind of an abrupt, odd ending, but it's Mahershala Ali and Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke, and then some other younger actors that I didn't recognize any of them from anything. And they are staying at an Airbnb when possibly the world kind of goes, or at least the country ends and goes crazy and breaks into war. Possibly. It's not clear whether or not things are actually happening. So it's got that, it's a little bit of like 10 Cloverfield Lane, a little bit like that M. Night Shyamalan movie from earlier this year where they were in the house, the cabin or whatever. Locked that was. Yeah. You guys remember this? House at the end of the world, whatever. That. It's got a little bit of that stuff, but I really dug it. I thought it was very well done, very well made, and has the kind of psychological thriller going without being overly psychological, I guess. I don't know. It's strange. If you've seen Mr. Robot, you know what to expect. This guy, he has very strange sensibilities, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, but this worked for me a lot. Wouldn't surprise me if either or both of you were like, this is terrible and it's in my end of the year, it's in my worst of the year list, but it's like at the bottom of my top 10 right now coming into the end of the year. So I really dug it.
Nice. Kent, what you got for us this year?
Yeah, I've got a documentary I'm going to recommend called Squaring the Circle.
Yeah.
And it's about Hypnosis, the guys who made basically all the Pink Floyd album covers, all the good ones, and Led Zeppelin.
Good album covers or good albums? Because I could argue on...
album covers. And
well, there's plenty of those. There's none of those.
Yeah, those exist, so that's cool.
I'm not going to go there. Trying to throw me off sides.
Good discipline. Yeah.
And I mean, you guys would know him from the band of Paul McCartney, Wings.
Oh.
The band he's known for.
That's his only band, right?
Yeah. I think so.
He's done some solo stuff too.
Yeah, The Fireman. Yeah, you're right.
McCartney 3, you're right. And so, yeah, did that song really cool. Kanye, I mean, I'm really interested in visual art, branding, all that kind of stuff. So it's a perfect cross section between visual design and music. So if you've ever wondered how or why album covers look the way they do, what the inspiration was, this is a really cool one. It gives you, you know, how they did The Dark Side of the Moon, how they did Venus and Mars from or Band on the Run or any of those. So really cool, really interesting.
Nice.
And it's just hit streaming, I think. Mm-hmm. And so check it out. Squaring the Circle is what it's called.
Very nice.
All right, I'll recommend a book about to get meta. This is a book called Opposable Thumbs by Matt Singer, and it's a complete history of Siskel and Ebert. So we had Life Itself years ago, the book and documentary. But I personally, as great as that book is, and documentary is even better, I always like biography more than autobiography because I like I don't like as much, you know, I like less agenda in it, or less, I don't care about people's personal feelings because, you know, ask about eyewitness testimony, we're normally wrong. So this guy's really done his homework and tells the whole story of all the various iterations of At the Movies and Siskel's life and Ebert's life, and gets really into the minutia of like negotiating how they went from public television to syndication and all the what that meant for them and all of that. I loved it. Thought it was super interesting. And, you know, we owe those guys like this podcast forever. We should tithe, you know, I always say all PGA Tour golfers should tithe like 5% to Tiger. We should probably do that to the estates of both of those gentlemen that we have this show. So definitely a worthwhile read if you're interested in the history of American, like not just film criticism, but also like television. You know, it's a really interesting when you think about things like Crossfire and PTI and all these shows that did the Siskel and Ebert thing for in other verticals. It's really interesting. So yeah, I loved it. Opposable Thumbs, Matt Singer, Siskel and Ebert. Nice. They were good.
Nice. I just as you were talking, it was a good reminder because you had sent us some stuff from that earlier, I guess last week, and I bought it.
Nice. See, one recommend already done.
Like it. You're welcome. The audiobook is Ebert's robot voice, right?
Yeah, but I do that with all, that's an option I do on all my audiobooks. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You can do that as it's an AI setting.
Yeah.
Or you can just get Chaz to read it. I alternate.
Chaz.
Bono, not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not Ebert. Not as well. Right. All right. Well, here we are. We did it. There's our Wonka. Love you guys. Great ep. Great times. We're about to get into the nitty gritty. This is where we get to hang out a lot, and hopefully you come and hang out with us because we have a lot going on. Everything starts hitting both streaming and theaters and all of that, and a lot of it's very good. So as we round out the sort of movie fiscal year, we'll go for probably about 6 more weeks, hopefully, and then the Oscars for some reason are about 6 weeks after that. So we have a lot going on over the next few weeks, a lot of great episodes, both here on the main feed, in the VIP channel as well, which is madaboutmovies.com/VIP, where you not only get extra episodes, but also the fun Discord and all of that. We've got some great stuff coming on. Kent mentioned earlier, we're doing Love Actually as our throwback this week. We've got an AMA that we're going to throw kind of both on here, but also in the extended things in the VIP. So definitely, join us. If you can join the VIP, great. If not, join us on this main feed. There's going to be a lot of content over the next few weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is my favorite time of the year to do the show. So it's the best. The best movies, the best conversations, the best arguments are found here on the Mad About Movies feed. So until next time, boys, I will see you at the cinema.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.
We'll be right back.